Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Welcome to this bonus episode of Sound Opinions. I'm Greg Kot. My partner over there is Jim DeRogatis. We both had a bunch of things to talk about this week that couldn't fit into our regular show. So we're going to split this bonus episode. It's going to be half Jim. You're going to go first. What are you going to bring us, Jim?
I recently interviewed Matt Muse, a hip-hop artist from here in Chicago, darn good one, to talk about his music, including the last single, Rapport, and this great holiday drive that he's doing.
Absolutely, Jim. In a city teeming with great hip-hop artists, Matt is very much at the top of the tier. For my part, I'm eager to pay tribute to a few artists who recently passed. We'll get into it all in a minute on Sound Opinions. Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island. Since 1988, Goose Island's been brewing beers in the spirit of Chicago.
You can find IPAs, lemonade, shandy, and limited releases in-store or at one of Goose's venues in Chicago. Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer. Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island. Since 1988, Goose Island has been brewing award-winning beers in Chicago that are inspired by this city. Take 312 Lemonade Shandy, Tropical Beer Hug Double IPA, and a rotating series of hazy IPAs only available in Chicago. You know, every time we go down to Goose Island, there's another one that they're pushing on us.
That's right.
They're all good.
Absolutely. And what supporters of musical culture, you know, in the city of Chicago and elsewhere, if you go to a show in Chicago and you see that Goose Island sign, you know you're in good hands. They're music fans as well as great beer makers at Goose Island. So we're really proud to be associated with them.
The Goose Island Beer Company, Chicago's beer. We are back. First, let's dive into my conversation with Matt Muse. Hey, man, thanks for taking time to do this.
How you doing, man? I'm chilling. It's good to be here. Thank y'all for having me.
Well, I've been a fan for some time, but I want to start with this current project, which is exciting. You're doing this Nappiness Hair Care Drive.
Yeah.
Second year in a row, right?
Yeah, third year, actually.
And this came out of Love and Nappiness, your 2019 EP.
Yeah. In 2019, I released the EP called Love and Nappiness, and it was like a grueling summer, just like grinding it out and doing my first headliner and all of that. And so In the fall, I was doing a lot of relaxing. And then I was like, yo, like, I want to do something that involves giving back. Like, I have been wanting to do some type of giving back for a couple of years anyway, just because I believe in, you know, community efforts and mutual aid. And it honestly just randomly came to my mind. I don't have like a cool, explanation of it. But yeah, I was like, oh, wait a minute. We should do a hair care drive and it should be called the Love and Nappiness Hair Care Drive. And that's kind of, how it happened.
Well, you have been somewhat obsessed with hair.
Yeah.
It's a recurring theme in your, right now your hair looks shorter than it's been.
No, it's not shorter. It's just, look, let me show you. Yeah. And then it's in twist. You know what I'm saying? Like probably the last time you saw me, it was in the fro, but it's in the twist now because it's so long. I have to like take better care of it now. So I have to put in these twists to kind of keep it smooth. But no, it's like probably two times longer than the last time you saw me.
Well, you know, the thing that strikes me about the drive that you're doing. Mm-hmm. You're asking people to give unopened self-care products, mm-hmm. basically hair care, skin care. And, you know, I mean, we think of food drives and basic needs, you mm-hmm. know, and diapers for victims of the hurricane, right? But it's like there's more to living. And I mean, there's a particularly compassionate thing I think you're doing here mm-hmm. is people who are struggling should be able to take care of themselves.
Yeah, I think, yeah, you said it almost perfectly. Yeah, like I think that for me, it's like I look at other drives and I'm like, yo, like I definitely think that we should also be giving necessities. And that's why we do have the personal hygiene products and stuff like that. But also, like, when it comes to like self-care products, folks in positions of privilege are able to access those and use them at will. And in a lot of cases, especially with Black hair, some of those products are necessities. And so in this case, I do want to give people like the opportunity to use something that if maybe they were better off financially, they would want to use it, even if it's not like a bare necessity. You know what I'm saying? Like give people the opportunity to take care of themselves properly first and foremost. That's why I want the natural hair care products. But then after mm-hmm. that, like indulge in something that folks in privilege get to indulge in very kind of loosely. You know what I'm saying? And I think that the last part to it is like, if nobody equips you with the knowledge of, you know, some of the dangerous products and I mean, dangerous ingredients in some products, you might not even know that the shampoo you're using is not good for your hair. You know what I'm saying? And so I hope this also gives folks the opportunity to learn like, oh, maybe I should be attempting to use a different product. And so there's that part of it, too.
Are you sure, Matt, in an alternate world, you wouldn't like to be a barber or a stylist?
That's funny. I think for me, it's just like I was raised by two parents who had no issues being experimental with both their hair and me and my siblings' hair when we were growing up. I had dreads when I was like very young. My mother had dreads my entire upbringing. She recently cut them off. And like my dad, he went from braids to like a little fade to twist. You know what I'm saying? Now my dad, he has gray hair, but he has these long, beautiful dreads now. And so like hair has just always been a form of self-expression in my household. And so for me, like the love for hair, and then also like my aunt, she owned a hair salon in Chicago called Naps on the Nine. And she also braided our hair growing up. And then her daughter ended up braiding our hair after that when we were growing up. So it was just my family was all about hair. And I think that's where the love for it comes from. I don't think I would ever be a stylist myself, but I just love hair. You know what I'm saying? It's a beautiful way of self-expression.
So, you know, I've been following your career for a while. And I have a confession to make.
Yeah, yeah.
Your mom is a friend of mine who helped me enormously to understand the trauma that R. Kelly's victims were going through.
Okay.
You know, she works in the community as a therapist and she's an educator. And of course, she went to Kenwood with Robert Sylvester, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So she's in my book. So I've been following your career for a while. You know, I've played you as a buried treasure on Sound Opinions.
Love.
And I really wanted to play Rapport, your latest single, mm-hmm. right? Because there are a couple of really lousy songs in Chicago music history that mention Lakeshore Drive,
okay.
right? And then there's a couple of good ones. I'm not a huge Smashing Pumpkins fan.
Okay.
But in Tonight Tonight, when that line comes, you know,
it's
the city
song.
By the lake, right? You know, about driving on the drive, right?
Yeah.
But I couldn't because you got too many cuss words in Rapport.
So sorry.
Couldn't play it on public radio, man.
So I got a clean version. If you would have asked me for the clean version, I would have sent it to you. Yeah.
All right, well, we may double back to that. I'll drop it in here.
Let's
I didn't know you had a
clean
version.
Yeah, I do. I'll send it to you. I'ma put you back out, stuck and dropping back out, till I hear the world shout, shout, let it out, sing along with my mouth, feeling my touch is old, it's old and I just struggle, can't no amount of rivals, block me out from my goals, was on a red line of typos, headphones loud with my eyes closed, see myself the day that I blowed, see my notes flipping my lows, so let's win, let's make it final, cause it's destined to something I know, hey.
It poses a serious question, you know, now, to some in Chicago hip-hop, these are dirty words, right?
Mm.
You are a conscious rapper. You are not disrespecting women. You know, you are not spewing hate. Common and Kanye have been heroes of yours. Mm-hmm. You've given interviews saying these guys were inspirations.
Definitely.
I know Rhymefest you've worked with, right? Young Chicago authors. But you don't shy away from the N-word.
Nah.
So I always said when I get to talk to Matt, I'm going to ask Dexter Matt about that, right? I mean, it's a word I can't say. It's a word no white music fan or critic should say. But you don't shy away from it. What's your thinking there?
You know, first and foremost, I look at the word as a term of endearment amongst people of color. And I believe that because of the idea of reclamation, which is when a group of people have been hoarded or damaged by a word, they have all right and power to take that word and make it what they want. Because of my belief in that, I don't, and you know, if when I'm given the opportunity to say this, I say it very confidently, you know, I don't believe that anybody who's not of the same race as me should even try to stop me from saying it. For example, I don't know if you heard about when Tim Anderson got suspended after that, like, brawl with the Royals after he threw the bat a couple years ago, and it was like a big deal. Part of his suspension was because he said the N-word in that little brawl, and I was just like, that's ridiculous. Rob Manfred should have no right to tell a black man that he's suspended from MLB because a black man said the N-word. I don't care. If you suspend him for the brawl, go ahead. But the fact that that was part of it, to me, continues a very toxic trait in this country of white men in power dictating what black and brown people can and can't do and say. And then to specifically do it with a word that white men started using to, you know, harm black and brown people. It's just like this really twisted, almost like emotional or mental abuse is kind of how I look at it. And so for me, it's a word that I use it in my personal life. I have no issue with the word. And because I want my music to be reflective of how I talk and who I am, I tend to say it a lot. And I say it in songs just like how I say it in sentences when I'm talking to my friends. And I think on top of that, like I said, in terms of reclamation, like, I think that the word has now changed. And not only should and are black people using it how they want, they also should be allowed to dictate who can and can't say it. And I'm A-okay with that.
You know, do you think that mindset, do you think it transfers to other words? Like, I don't hear you say the B word.
Yeah, because I believe that the B word has been used to ridicule women. And so I believe I have a lot of friends who use it as terms of endearment with their women friends who use it as terms of endearment with their women friends. And I think they have all right to do that. And I think conversely, I myself am in a body that has perpetrated the negative use of that word. And so I shouldn't be, not only should I not be saying it, but I also shouldn't be dictating the way that other people use it. My mom also does not like that word. And so a big thing for me growing up when I first started rapping was to make sure I never said it in my raps, because she made it very clear when we were growing up how much she hates that word.
You don't want to tick
Charlene. We don't want that. That also lends to the thing I'm talking about. If my mom one day wakes up and is like, actually, I'm gonna start calling all my friends the B word, I'm like, hey, you got the right to do that as long as they okay with it. You know what I'm saying? Because you obviously experienced something with this word that made you hate it. And so that's why I don't use the B word. I live in a body that has perpetrated the use of it negatively. So I have no right to be saying it or telling people how to say it.
You know, as a great artist and as an educator with Young Chicago Authors, I knew you would have an ideal answer for that, you know, because, you know, I teach at Columbia College. I have a big first year students. I have 300 two sections.
Wow.
We talk about music and media in Chicago. We get to the hip hop class, you know, and they want to talk about Chief Keef.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it's like, you know, all right, let's listen. What is he saying?
you gotta give him his flowers, though, man. Chief Keef, I get it. I get, you know, what you just said, but I also kind of look at it like he's a voice for people who were voiceless at that time. You know what I'm saying? He's a pioneer for a whole section of Chicago that was being completely ignored, not only by the city, and it's still being ignored by the city itself, but if you think about hip-hop, if you think about hip-hop, like, there hasn't always been a lane for people who weren't conscious. Like, it's just like when Ye got signed, all it was gangster rappers. Then Ye got popular, and then Chicago kind of made it like this weird thing where if you didn't talk about backpack rap, you weren't a good rapper.
Do you think there was a period like that?
Because, 100%. I mean, from my perspective, we still might be in it, but that's
really,
Go ahead,
from my perspective, having covered Common from the beginning, right, when he was still Common Sense,
yeah,
up to the present, it always seems to me that Chicago's been written off. And that's another question I wanted to ask you. You know, granola eaters, backpackers, goody goody, you know, I mean, here you are doing a hair care drive for people. And, you know, it's almost as if, well, Chicago's not real. Those guys are all soft, you know, and I wonder if you've wrestled with that, because you've got humor, you've got Tales from the Streets, you've got songs about family, right? I mean, you touch on the full 360 of Black life in Chicago,
yeah,
right? Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that's the Chicago tradition. You know, when Common's rapping about how am I a good dad,
yeah,
when Kanye is rapping about being at his grandmother's deathbed, you know, in Roses, right? Or not making enough money to take the bus to the Gap where he's trying to make money, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you're in that tradition, but it always seems to hang over Chicago hip hop that we're soft.
I don't know. I'm not super well versed on, you know, when Con first came out, or even like the beginnings of Kanye's, you know, popularity in Chicago specifically. When I first started listening to hip hop, it was much more on a national scale. I didn't get into the Chicago music scene until I started rapping here a few years ago. My thoughts is like, I'm kind of looking at it more, you know, now from like a mainstream versus underground slash indie vibe. You know what I'm saying? I think that there isn't a lot of space for specific types of rap in the mainstream. I think that mainstream media and mainstream music, they like specific figures. So like, this person's going to be our conscious. This person's going to be our party rapper. This person's going to be our mix of the two. And there isn't space for anybody else, you know, in there. And so they end up automatically being underground. And, you know, I think that the cool thing about at least 2021 is I think that a lot the internet has made this thing where, like, you can diss a person all you want to. Like when Khaled dissed Tyler, the Creator, I don't know if you heard about that a few years ago when he didn't have the number one song on Billboard. He's like, who is this guy? And the whole world was like, what do you mean? Who is Tyler, the Creator? Like, what are you talking about? And to me, that the beauty of that moment was like, I felt like it was a triumph for underground artists and for indie artists who aren't doing huge things in the mainstream, because it was like, yo, if the industry don't know, the people know. And that to me is what's really going to move the industry ultimately. And so for Tyler, the Creator, to be kind of like exalted in the face of this artist who is internationally known and popular showed me that we've at least come a long way, you know. Yeah. And I think that on a Chicago level, I don't think Chicago people even care if people think we sissies, you know what I'm saying? Like it is what it is, you know. Look at what Chance did, you know what I'm saying, through all of that. Look at what Saba's doing through all of that. Look at what Mick Jenkins has done. Look at what No Name has done, you know what I'm saying? Like, and I'm missing a lot of people, but a whole lot of other phenomenal artists are breaking through regardless. And I think that is due in part to the internet being so good at like being like, no, we support you and we hear you regardless of what the industry wants and doesn't want. You know what I'm saying?
We don't need gatekeepers.
Exactly.
We don't care about gatekeepers.
Exactly.
I hear what you're saying. So in this Metro show celebrating the hair drive, you're performing with The Mind, collaborated on Rapport, Jamila Woods.
Yeah.
What a voice.
Yeah.
She's been on the show.
Oh, nice.
How did you meet?
The first time I met Jamila was I believe it was the first time I ever went to Wordplay at YCA, the open mic. I was in college and me and my friend at the time, well, my girlfriend at the time, we came on the train from school because I went to NIU. And so we were just like, hey, so I had hit my friend up and I was like, yo, what are some open mics I should go to in the city? And he was like, go to this one, go to that one, go to Wordplay. So it was during the summer. We got on the train. We came up here. When we were in there, she was hosting Wordplay. And I'm like, her voice sounds crazy familiar, just like her speaking voice. I'm like, and I'm like, is that the girl from Sunday Candy? Then I end up talking to her at the end and she's like, yeah, that's me. And I'm like, oh, what's up? Good to meet you. Because Sunday Candy was like one of my favorite songs that summer. And so that was my first time meeting her. And then when I got hired at YCA in 2016, she was the leader of the teaching artist cohort that I was a part of. And we worked together for, I believe, 3 to 4 years. I don't remember exactly when she left YCA, but at least 3 years we worked together. And in that time, we built a friendship. I have a huge amount of respect for her. So I struggle sometimes to like put the words together to like go to her and ask her for advice and stuff like that. But anytime I talk to her about whatever it is, she's always open. And she I feel like she's found a way to make space for me in Chicago in a way that I wanted space. So that's how we met. That's how we know each other. And through all of that, she's still, like, outside of our friendship, she, to me, is a genius and is one of the best artists.
Sound Opinions is a national show. But I wanted to talk to you because the Hair Care Drive is worth putting a spotlight on. And also,
I appreciate that so much.
Well, and everything that you're doing is such a part, it's a model here in Chicago that we have for community. Mm-hmm. So people don't know what Young Chicago Authors is outside of Chicago. Tell me about that. You were saying you and Jamila, I know Rhymefest's been involved, right? What is it that the program does?
Yeah, so the goal of Young Chicago Authors is to make space for young people through creative writing. That's like the quickest way I can say it. Young people in Chicago through creative writing. So we facilitate programming around writing that hopes to reach young people, I believe, like high school to their mid-20s, so like 14 to 24, 25 type range. And we do it in a various number of ways. Like I said, our public programming is like multiple writing workshops. We have Check the Method, which is led by Iman Loren. We have a new workshop called Under the Mic. And Check the Method is like a poetry writing workshop. With Iman hosting it, it has so many other like unique aspects to it. We have Under the Mic, which is a hip hop workshop and professional development workshop that I'm leading now. We have a songwriting workshop by Rich Robbins. Dominique James is hosting a personal statement and like scholarship, you know, workshop because she's an academic, you know what I'm saying? So she's helping young people work on their academic status. All four of those people I just named, including myself, are writers in some capacity.
Yeah.
You know, the goal is to provide programming to the young people in the city, you know, that they otherwise may not have access to, or maybe their schools might not have these same artistic programs, but we want to always be a haven for creative writing, whether that's hip hop, poetry, or whatever else in between.
Well, you nailed it. I think the thing that's inspiring is that whether you're sitting down to write a piece of prose, a poem, or a rap, I mean, it's all the same thing. It's the power of the word.
The words, yeah, exactly.
My parents named me Dexter, but you can call me Matt. I hope you still remember. Yeah, we go way back. Me at 16, swearing I'm gonna be a preacher. Me at 21, writing raps and ignoring teachers. Now me at 26, 10 years from you, but searching for a verse to keep the congregation moved. Guess we ain't that far removed.
So, Love and Nappiness, the EP came out last year.
2019 was when it came out.
2019.
Yeah.
So, well, yeah, you know. The COVID.
It's everything's
changed,
together,
Dark.
Right?
Yeah. COVID has stopped time. It's about hair in part. It's about family. It's also about love. And you said, you know, and I remember something Brian Eno said years ago in like the 70s. The last thing popular music ever needs is another love song. You know, write about anything else, right? But you took a really unique approach mm-hmm. to writing a set that's largely about love.
You know, the crazy thing about the concept of Love and Happiness is that just like the concept of the hair care drive, it literally just came to me. I really wish like, and I say this to say, I really wish I had like, or I could remember the specific moment when these concepts come to me, but I really don't. It just be like, oh, hey, you should do this. I was probably driving. But the concept of the album is that every song on the album is about a different kind of love. So I wanted to take, like you said, writing a love song, but like kind of turning it on its head because I, you know, at the time, especially I'm like, yo, love songs are so corny. Like, and there are some really good ones, but just in general, I'm like, yo, like I personally, for some whatever weird reason, don't like love songs. So how can I make my own love song that fits, you know, what I like? And so each song is about a different type of love. The first song is about God's love. The second song is about intimate love between partners. The songs three and four are about self-love. The fifth song is about love between friends, and the final song was about familial love.
Well, you even researched the Greek terms for the different kinds of love.
In the titles are the Greek terms for them, and like what's crazy is the word agape was the one that I was familiar with because we used to do this thing called the Agape Festival at our church, and that's like God's love. And so I was like, huh, okay, we got agape. Like, what if we can, you know, get into some of these other ones? And then I was like, oh, wow. And when I was reading the list of the Greek words, that helped me kind of say like, okay, yeah, I should write a song about this one and this one and this one and this one. And they kind of went from there.
So is Rapport a taste of another EP or an album, or what are you doing next?
Rapport is a taste of an album. I am working on an album. And next year, 2022... just like you said, like it's been the pandemic kind of smashed everything together. It doesn't feel like it's been that long, but like when I look at the math, like it's been 2 years since I dropped the project, and that just feels weird to say. So 2022, I'm speaking it, you know, we finna start working on it. There will be a new Matt Muse album. I don't know if Rapport will be on there.
Well, and it was something different from you because, you know, there was a lot more melody and
exactly.
You were getting away from that kind of flow that you, I don't even know how to characterize it, but there is a Matt Muse flow and you're like, I'm going to do something different on this one.
And that's the goal. I will say, I won't give away the name of the album or anything like that, but the goal of the album is to make people feel and think that, like, oh, wow, like a bunch of people were like, yo, I've never heard you rap like this. Like, I played Rapport for people before it came out, and they were like, it was one person who heard the whole song, and they were like, where were you at? Like, did you rap? And I'm like, that was me rapping. And then there was another person, when I started rapping, like, is that you? And I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, that's good. Like, that's what's supposed to happen. Like, it's not supposed to sound like the last thing and the last thing. And I think the other thing is the next project will be my first vacation from the hair-themed music. And so I think it makes sense for it to sound different. Like, leave that sound with the two projects that you know, I've imprinted that in, and then let's try something new with the new project.
All right. Well, thanks, my friend.
Appreciate you so much. Thank you.
That's it for my conversation with Matt Muse. Greg, in a minute, it'll be your turn to pay tribute to some artists we lost by adding a few songs to the Desert Island Jukebox. Give us a hint about who you'll be honoring.
Well, it's a diverse group, Jim. Just a stunning week for losses in the music world. I'm going to give you not just two, but three people, actually, that we should be thinking about this week.
Excellent. Sad, but fitting. That's coming up in a minute on Sound Opinions. Remember in 2018 when Border Patrol separated thousands of refugee kids from their parents, deported those parents back to their home countries, and kept the kids in the United States? Believe it or not, 6 years later, there are still hundreds of families who have not yet been reunited.
Though we as a community may feel hopeless at times, we recently learned about an organization called Al Otro Lado, which works to reunify families. They provide holistic legal and humanitarian support to refugees, deportees, and other migrants in the U.S. and Tijuana through a multidisciplinary, client-centered, harm reduction-based practice.
Since 2018, they've reunited over 100 refugee families ripped apart by the zero-tolerance policy of the previous administration. Once reunited, Al Otro Lado helps each family find legal representation, housing, and the counseling they need in order to heal and get back on their feet.
Imagine having your child ripped from your arms and never knowing when you would see them again. We can't let family separations go on. If you're like us and believe that all families belong together, then join us supporting Al Otro Lado and donate today.
You can find the link to donate to Al Otro Lado in the description of this episode, or go to gum.fm/charity and donate today. That's gum.fm/charity.
You can also consider volunteering with the organization, which offers opportunities that are both in-person and virtual. The best way to get involved is by filling out an application on their website, elotrolado.org/volunteer.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
We are back. Greg, let's hear the folks you're going to be paying tribute to today.
Jim, I want to start with Michael Nesmith. I think one of the most high profile of the musical deaths in the last year, really.
Yeah.
You know, when you're talking about one of the founding members of the Monkees, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, let's face it. I mean, for a long time, people thought of the Monkees as sort of this cartoon band. You know, they were a manufactured band. They weren't the real deal. You know, they happened to be coming up during the Beatles era, and they were always compared to the Beatles. Well, the Beatles are real. The Monkees are fake.
Really, the birth in rock and roll and criticism of the argument of, quote-unquote, authenticity.
Yes, and now I think we have a completely different view of what the Monkees actually were. Michael Nesmith, one of the four founding members, as I mentioned, it's not on just one. Mickey Dolenz is the sole surviving Monkee. Michael Nesmith passed away at the age of 78 on December 10th. You know, he had a fascinating life, and you can read all the obits that are out there on him, because he's been involved in so many things. The birth of MTV, you know, his projects outside of the realm of music. But I want to focus on music itself, because Nesmith, I still think, doesn't get his due for what he was able to contribute. Now, I've seen a lot of writers, especially in recent weeks, focusing on the fact that, hey, this guy was the, you know, at the foundation of country folk, you know, or
alt country.
Alt country, country rock, country folk, whatever you want to call it. And to an extent, the skeptics were jumping in. Well, that was really Gram Parsons. He didn't get in on the ground floor. It was the Flying Burrito Brothers. It was early Byrds, And, you know, Nesmith, okay. So Nesmith started putting out a series of country-focused albums in the early 70s, which certainly set a template. They kind of preceded the Eagles, to the punch in terms of crafting that sound, putting out a bunch of records that focused on that sound. The Eagles basically took that sound and made a lot of money off it. Nesmith, by that time, had quit doing those kind of records because nobody was buying them.
Yeah.
The other thing to note about Nesmith in regard to country rock is that in 65, when he was a young man in his early 20s, pre-Monkees, had already written a song called Different Drum, which Linda Ronstadt later recorded. So this guy was, in fact, a pioneer of the sound. And probably is starting to get some credit for it. Again, as notable as that is, I want to focus on one other aspect of Michael Nesmith's career as a musician. His integral role as a songwriter and musician within the Monkees. The Monkees never got their due as songwriters, as musicians. Mike Nesmith was all of that times 10. You think about the songs that he wrote for Monkees albums, Mary Mary, which Paul Butterfield covered, Listen to the Band, The Girl I Knew Somewhere. Check out those songs. They're incredible. But the song I want to focus on is from the Head record. You and I are big fans.
Oh, I know where you're going.
Yeah, and I'm glad you do, because we love this record. The soundtrack was vilified when it came out. So was the movie. Like, it's so weird. It's so strange. It's a very subversive view of the pop music industry. Mm-hmm. In fact, you know, Jack Nicholson was involved, Bob Rafelson. These were genuine subversives, and Michael Nesmith and the Monkees were part of the plot. I mean, there's a reason that Frank Zappa loved these guys. You know, so there's Nesmith doing a track called "Circle Sky" from the Head album. He plays guitar, organ, percussion. He's the lead vocalist on this track. Here's Michael Nesmith at his best, "Circle Sky," from the Head soundtrack on Sound Opinions.
The Monkees, Michael Nesmith, "Circle Sky." What a song, Greg! Another loss we've got to
Indeed,
talk about.
We do. In fact, let's go for two more. I did want to mention Greg Tate, great writer who died at the age of 64. These deaths, I should point out, all happened within the span of a few days in the first week of December. It's just devastating stuff. Tate, some of it, not necessarily a household name for people who didn't read rock criticism, music criticism, but you and I both did.
Oh, yeah.
Hugely influential in our world. You know, I read him first in The Village Voice, got to meet him at a new music seminar in the early 90s. Nicest guy you could possibly meet.
Absolutely.
Was knowledgeable about other people's work and could comment on it in a really astute way. And I learned a lot just talking from Greg about writing. You know, your hero, Lester Bangs, I really think of Greg Tate as sort of the a mirror image of him, you know, in terms of African-American writing, the way the poetic use of language, the explosiveness of it, the musicality that he brought to his writing.
And the larger-than-life personality.
Yeah.
His byline in The Village Voice was Greg Iron Man Tate.
And he played in rock bands. He was a founder of the Black Rock Coalition. So we're going to miss Greg immensely. I can't believe he's gone at age 64. And finally, I wanted to mention Robbie Shakespeare, the great bassist, you know, Sly and Robbie. You know, you could never mention one without the others. Robbie Shakespeare, Sly Dunbar. Robbie died at the age of 68. He was kind of the intellectual half of the duo. You know, Sly was more outgoing, flamboyant. Robbie was more the introspective one. The first time I saw those two guys on stage together, they just started forming, you know, working together as a rhythm section and starting to get some notoriety. They played on Peter Tosh's tour opening for the Rolling Stones in 1978. And I saw those two guys on stage with Tosh, and I'm just going, wow, these guys look cool.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And they were bringing reggae forward. You know, that Rasta reggae sound that was so ubiquitous in the 70s that influenced bands like the Stones. These guys were bringing it forward because of their Afrofuturistic viewpoint of the music, you know, bringing jazz elements into it, using drum machines on their records, you know, started to invent the sound. But the record that always blew me away every time I go back to it, and the first time that I really, once I started exploring who these guys were after being introduced to them by the Stones, was the Mighty Diamonds record, Right Time. And it came out in 76. To me, it was a signpost of the era. Beautiful harmony vocals. But as great as the singing was, Sly and Robbie were up front in that mix. And Robbie's bass is the signature instrument on that record. It doesn't overwhelm the vocalists, supports them beautifully. But at the same time, they're singing about apocalypse in Right Time. This is righteous reggae, right?
Yeah.
And who's going to be leading the charge into the apocalypse? It's going to be Robbie Shakespeare's bass.
Yeah.
Right Time from the Mighty Diamonds with the great Robbie Shakespeare on bass on Sound Opinions.
Right Time by the Mighty Diamonds, a tribute to Robbie Shakespeare, dead at the age of 68. That is it for this bonus episode. Share your thoughts on Michael Nesmith, Robbie Shakespeare, Greg Iron Man Tate, or anything else on our website, soundopinions.org. Leave us a voice message, and we may even play it on the show. As always, Sound Opinions is produced by Andrew Gill, Alex Claiborne, our associate producer, Sol Delgadillo, and our intern, Mary Bernthal. Our social media consultant is Katie Cott. Thanks for listening.